Patients want more convenience from their health systems. I'm Ron Southwick, lead editor of Chief Healthcare Executive. In this episode of Databook, we're talking with Dr. Vanessa Diaz, a physician leader at the Medical University of South Carolina Health System. She talks about providing digital tools to help patients get more access to care, the transformation of health systems, getting input from doctors, and keys for organizations to making life better for patients and their physicians. It's a great conversation. Thanks for joining us. This is Databook. We're talking today with Dr. Vanessa Diaz, a physician leader at the Medical University of South Carolina Health System. Thanks so much for joining us today. We really appreciate it.
Well, thank you. Great to be here.
Okay. Let's just talk about patients and how they're using technology differently and what that means for health systems. How are you seeing that at MUSC Health?
I think one of the things that has really changed is patients' expectations of us, right? If we can have self-serve kiosks at the grocery store, at the airports, one-click shopping at our internet sites, why in healthcare can't we have that same level of convenience? You know, why do I have to be on the phone, call somebody, wait 15 minutes, and go through a lot of steps to be able to book my appointments? Why can't I just figure out like who I want to see and then be able to give in those options, right? So I think it's great that they're holding us accountable, because I do think that the more convenient our care is for our patients and the more access they have to us, the better we are at forming that collaborative relationship that is going to improve their care. And I will put out there that I am a family physician, so I'm in primary care. And so we definitely are about being convenient, longitudinal relationships with our patients, and how do we make that easy for them. Now, as I said, they're holding us accountable to that. And it is having us as the providers and the healthcare system looking at things differently. It's a lot easier for us to say, I'm going to see everybody in 30-minute appointments from this time to this time, and that's what it is. And they have to fit into my schedule or they don't. But really now we have so many different options. There's virtual options. There's things like remote patient monitoring and other ways that we can interact with our patients outside of that office visit. And again, what we also try to do is do a lot of outreach. Maybe you forgot to do your mammogram. That's okay. But let's make sure we remind you, and don't just expect that you're going to remember everything I told you during our visit. And let's make it as easy as possible for you.
Such a great point when you talk about people being used to convenience, whether it's like, restaurant, hotel reservations, running a vacation house, things like that. That's really easy right now. And I think too long, even just in the last couple of years, there were still a lot of health systems. Yeah, but health systems different. Healthcare is different. So we just have to accept that. And it feels like a lot of health systems now saying, we really do need to adjust and meet patients where they're at. So, I mean, do you see that change?
Absolutely. And I think it's great that the technology is also helping us to do that. So we work with a variety of different vendors with our EHR, and we're always looking for those ways to improve how we interact with our patients. So I talked about the person who forgot to do their mammogram. In the olden days, we'd have to have a nurse give a phone call. Maybe they would also be a person who could schedule you in. But usually it was just somebody like, hey, call this number and go ahead and get that scheduled. Now, because of a vendor we work with, we send out a text to the patient that says, hey, you haven't done your mammogram this year. Do you want to schedule it? With one click, they can then go to a site where all the mammogram appointments near them are available to them, and they can click into it and make their appointment right there. And so I definitely see that change, and I think it's really good. I think the thing that then becomes a little bit overwhelming is that we shouldn't just adopt things because they're cool and different and shiny, right? We then really have to think about what is the goal, right? If the goal is I'm going to make it really easy for that person to have that mammogram, great. What I just mentioned is a great way to do that. There are some things that we've looked at that are like, this looks really nice, but what's the purpose it's really serving? And are we really doing it in a different way? So I think that's the other thing that I would definitely caution people is that, there are so many opportunities right now is that we really need to be thoughtful about identifying what is the right opportunity for us as the health system, for our patients and for our providers, and really thinking through what's going to be worth the lift, because everything takes change management, right? Like, and so there are some things that are definitely worth it, and some things that's like, you know what? That's not necessarily the thing we need to be doing right this second.
Well, talk about some of the work your health system's done. I mean, you've already mentioned a couple of things, but it seems like you're taking a thoughtful approach in terms of making things accessible for patients, but also kind of fitting within the workflow of the organization too. So talk about some of that balance.
Yeah, so that's a great question, and maybe I'll give you an example. So we recently worked with DexCare, which is this online appointment scheduling software that helps patients find our appointments better, right? We always had a website. Our website, we would joke about how hard it was to find. Like, even when I know who I was looking for, I often was like, how am I not finding this? Now instead, what it does is you can search by the area. It shows you not just the clinic you were looking for, clinics around, shows you who has available appointments, their specialties, et cetera, things like that, right? So, which is great for the patients. But we really needed to roll this out on in a multi-step approach because, again, change, you really have to be thoughtful about change. So the first thing we did is kind of what I said up front. It's like, does this align with our values and our priorities, right? We want our patients to be able to find us easier. Beyond that, too, we know we get tons of phone calls. Our patient access center, which is our centralized phone scheduling folks, they can't keep up with the number, and they have an average of like 2 minutes to like finish a call. It's like that's not great, right? It's stressful on them. It's stressful on the patient who's getting like shuffled along. So we also thought that this was actually going to have a great impact too. If we could have more people schedule online, then those phone calls could really be for things that people need help with, more help with, right? Than just, I just want to schedule an appointment. So that worked out well. Then we had to engage our physicians and as you can and providers. And as you can imagine, it's like, oh no, this is going to be anarchy. I'm going to, you know, my geriatricians are going to start seeing babies all of a sudden just because people are going to do willy-nilly, right? And so that's when you have to be thoughtful again about the technology and what it can offer. It's like, no, we can have age limits. We can, you know, we can do this and this and that to kind of limit it to make it work out. And so we designed the workflow with our end users, who are our providers, our staff, our practice managers. And then this is also the really important thing. We went with a phased approach, right? Because I have done many rollouts. It never worked. No matter how much you planned and how many contingencies you thought of, there's always a glitch you did not consider or something that is unexpected, right? So we always phase it out. We figure out what the glitches are. And then what's really great too is the people that are our pilot folks, especially if we've done the first steps well, they become your biggest champions. And so when they're telling everybody else, oh, our patients are so happy because now they can come in and see us. I'm not getting all these in-basket messages from patients who can't find an appointment because now they're just doing it online. All of a sudden, other people are clamoring to then, hey, when are we going on this new system, et cetera, right? And so I think that really helps us be thoughtful as we go through. And then the final thing, which again is really easy to forget because you feel so good once you get something out there. It's like, all right, we turned it on. It's working. Woohoo, we did it. It's making sure you collect the feedback and then adjust. Because again, as you expand out, sometimes it's as easy as like, hey, patients are really confused by this one question we're asking. What if we word it a different way? Or you know, they're never filling out this question on the last page. Can we move it to a different spot because it's a really important question? And little things like that. And I think as we have done our rollouts at MUSC, we really have tried to take that approach of being very collaborative and inclusive with everybody who's affected. And I think that gains you trust. And so they're more willing to go along with us as we continue to evaluate things and continue to try to innovate.
It's so funny when you talked about, like, no matter what you do, what every safeguard you can take, and there's still going to be that inevitable glitch because just it's technology and just life, just things happen. So having to roll with that is definitely part of it. I also wanted to ask about just getting the physician input in developing these tools too, because that's sometimes where things can go off track a little bit, where you've developed tools, and even with the best intention of helping doctors as much as patients, but if you don't get the doctor and nurse input in some of these tool rollouts, you can really roll in problems. So how do you make sure that you're getting that physician insight in the development of these tools?
Yeah, and that's a great question. And a lot of it is thinking through your timeline, right? And I've been prey to this too, right? It's all rush, rush, rush. Let's get it done. This is good. Let's go, go, go. And you want to be quick and not have unnecessary wait. But on the other hand, there are some things that you just have to kind of hold sacrosanct and say, like, we're not going to do this without at least having one feedback session with our folks. We have to do some initial buy-in work. And so it really is the leader holding themselves accountable to building that into the timeline as they're doing the work. And then it's really depends on the tool. There are some things where it's not really going to impact the workflow that much, but you still want people to know. And that can be more informational, let's say, right? But like you're saying, there's some things where it's like, I'm going to change the right you do your notes. Or for instance, another example recently, if we've been piloting different digital cognitive screening tools. So it's a tool on the tablet, you take a test, and then it tells you whether you're likely to have a cognitive impairment or not, like dementia, et cetera, right? And that's something that was going to impact the workflow a lot, right? Because we're going to be doing that in our clinics. And so for that, we actually set up a 9-month pilot or a 3-month pilot where we went through and with three different companies, we tested their product within a few of our clinics, the same clinic. So then they could say, hey, this one is the one I like the most, et cetera. So I think you also have to consider the product and consider the impact. And then be able to say, like, how much input do I need? For something that I'm going to ask people to be doing within the practice, that's a lot of input I need. And I probably need to spend more time working on that versus, again, something where we have a voice bot that answers our phone calls. They need to be aware of it in case patients ask them about it. But if it's really doing all the same workflow that we were doing before, that's more informational. And we found that approach has worked a lot. And I talked a little bit about gaining trust before. We've all been in rooms, I'm sure, where you're asking for feedback, and there's nothing but silence. And then you have to try to interpret the silence of like, are you quiet because you agree, or are you quiet because you very sullenly disagree and you're just not telling me, right? And so it's getting that level of trust where people can tell you, I think this is a really bad idea, and this is why. And you can have that conversation. And sometimes they're right, and sometimes they're not. But at least that way you can talk about it. And so then at the end, it comes down to really having clear values and principles for what you're doing. And I think that's one thing that I've really tried to engender in our folks. They know at the end of the day, my first thing is always patient care. Is this going to be better for the patient? After that is, what about our providers and staff? Am I asking them to do something that is just not feasible and it's going to burn everybody out? And then it's okay. And can we do it in a way that is responsible to the health system in a financial way and fits in well with the overall collaboration? But if we can all agree, right, that a little bit of maybe discomfort as we change or innovate is okay, if what we're really ending up with is something that could be much better for our patient care, then I think you can always have those conversations and end up in a good spot.
How do you balance when between making sure you've got digital tools that are available for patients in terms of like the patient that wants to just schedule online, they don't need a person to guide them for an appointment or maybe to ask a question or things like that, versus the people who are going to be pretty insistent, like, I don't want to go through all this. I want to deal with a human being, or at least maybe they tried the digital approach, but now they're running headaches like, okay, I've been trying this for 10 minutes. I need a person now. So how do you make sure the tools are available for those who need them, but also that there's that off ramp, like if somebody prefers a person, or maybe they've actually genuinely tried and they need a person, then can get that person. Because you could actually build up some friction that way if you don't at least have the option of reaching a person at some point easily.
Absolutely true. And I think that's why we always try to think of like, what is our backup plan? We are not only going to have online scheduling, right? And we make sure we have phone numbers easily displayed right on the website. You can't find what you need, call here, you know, kind of thing. So that people can find that off ramp, like you said. And then, you know, I mentioned the voice bot, it's the same kind of thing. What's really cool about the voice bot we're using is that it is it has an algorithm where it listens for frustration in the voice. So even before the person starts saying, "Person, human, I want a human," right? Or I have literally seen people in my family do that. Have I done that? Let's not go there, right? But it listens for that frustration in the inner interaction, and then it says, "Hey, I think I'm going to send you to our, you know, our human counterpart who may be able to help you better," right? So it's a really great point that we have to think about that, and then while still encouraging people to try it out, because you know, we all remember when COVID hit, we barely were doing any video visits, and then COVID really made it so we had to do a lot of video visits within healthcare. And we were always before COVID saying like, "Oh, most people can't do these. It's not going to work out." And tons of people adapted. We had to, right? But now I've got patients that I never thought would love video visits. Who'll be like, "Hey, can I do my next one as a video? It's I don't want to have to, you know, come down here and park and spend the extra time, or you know, because of work, it's much easier. Can we do the next one video, et cetera, like that?" Right? So I do think it's important to push a little bit and make sure that folks at least try it out. But we definitely, there are people who don't have the technology, the bandwidth, the health literacy, et cetera, and we have to have options for them too.
Okay, first of all, I was that person who's saying person. So, full disclosure there. It made me think it wasn't even a healthcare thing that came up, but about a month or a couple months ago, my car battery died, so I called AAA and they had an AI agent working through. But eventually, it was like, okay, I need a person because I had to make a flight. So I'm like, I just need a person. And it wasn't hearing my numbers. I'm like, I need a person. And then it actually says, are you sure you need a person? I think I can help you. I'm like, oh my gosh, it's just like really ticking me off. So like, again, great that you have some of those tools, but when it's, you know, they couldn't pull up my number, and then they couldn't pull, like, I've been a member for 23 years, so it's like one of those things, like, at some point you got to make it a little easier to get to the person when you need it. So
Absolutely. Well, and you know, it makes me think of we recently, I guess not that recently, it's been almost 2 years now, we went to an AI scribe product, right, for our providers. And it was the same kind of thing I was just talking about, where it's the same thing for our providers. We did a pilot first. We tried to get it as easy to use as possible, and we would still get the complaints. "Oh, this doesn't look like my note. This is too wordy. I don't know that I like it," et cetera, right? But now, like when most people have had it, we made it system wide for everybody to have access to it. Now people love it because they realize, yes, my note now looks a bit different. It's not going to be writing it exactly as I write it, but the information is there. It's gotten a lot better. And that's the really interesting thing about our digital tools, right? They start at a certain spot. I've never seen them improve over time. And that's the other thing that you have to think about as a leader, right? Do I think this can get better fast enough where it's still worth it versus, this is just not going the way. But anyway, now people love it, and they can't imagine, me too. I can't imagine going through a clinic day where I'm going back to trying to take notes or writing my notes real quick on the thing, as opposed to now I just put my phone down and it does the documentation for me. So I think there's a lot of opportunity there. If we can get over that hill of having people try it out. And then obviously people can still write their notes. I still absolutely have some folks who will not use the AI scribe. And it's like, "All right, you're getting your notes done. I'm not gonna yell at you about it." But going in the same segue too, I'll say too, the other thing that I think has been really helpful to us in making sure we look at this in a really broad scope is we have a digital transformation team. And this is definitely something that I would recommend to any health system, any leader. Because you need to have a team that is interacting both with the technology and with the providers, the clinic staff. You asked me, how do we make sure that interaction happens? They're part of that too. Because I can go to them and say, these are my pain points. I do not have the time or really the expertise to then be able to go out into the world and say, these are the best companies with the best products that can address the issue, right? And so they have that expertise. They work with me and other clinical leaders on the clinical needs. And then we come together and say, yes, this deserves a pilot. No, this is definitely not it. Or, hey, this is a really cool tool, but it is just not something that we have a problem with and it's something we need to address, et cetera. So I think that's having a team that's job is really is to help us do that implementation and then has experience with it. So it can help us walk through it is really, really important.
Well, before we wrap up, you mentioned a really good lesson there about the digital transformation team, but what are some other lessons that you've learned that might be useful for other health systems as you pursue digital transformation and making it easier for patients to engage the system?
I think the I mentioned it a little bit, but one of the most important things is really be aware of what the pain points are. Don't spend time fixing issues that are minor or maybe even non-existent, right? You really have to know the providers, the staff, and the patients too. We have patient advisory panels that help us. We've done focus groups and other things like that just to make sure we don't lose all those voices. We really need to make sure we understand what we're trying to do and how it affects our patients, our providers, to be able to be successful.
Well, that's a good place to wrap it up. So, we've been talking to Vanessa Diaz of MUSC Health. Thanks so much for talking with us today. We really appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for listening to Databook, a podcast from Chief Healthcare Executive. You can subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. For the latest news, in-depth analysis, and deeper dives on the big issues in the world of healthcare, visit chiefhealthcareexecutive.com. You can also follow us on LinkedIn, Facebook, and X. I'm Ron Southwick. Thanks for joining us. Take care.